is three decisions in life. The best decision you can make is the right decision. The second best decision you can make is the wrong decision because you learn from it. The worst decision you can make is indecision. So that's me complaining about my situation, but not doing anything to change it.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. This week, I'm honored to be joined by Pat Dively. Pat is someone I've looked up to for an incredible amount of time and someone I would benchmark myself on personally and professionally in terms of he's one of the best podcasts I have ever listened to and something I listen to every single week. We went deep on this one. We really chatted about a huge variety of things, not just Pat's career as an entrepreneur. We talked about everything from how to cope with the barrage of information that we're all bombarded with every single day. We talked about the moments that have defined Pat's life so far and the decisions he made to get there and the decisions he made afterwards. We talked about Pat's process for learning, which I found personally super interesting. And we also try to define what it means to be a man in 2020. It's a wide-ranging chat. It's super enjoyable. This is my chat with Mr. Pat Dively. Pat, welcome to the pod.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited. I've not been doing too many of these during lockdown because I got a bit fatigued with podcasts, but I'm happy we get to do this today. So thank you.
I'm delighted. Yeah, it's great to have you on. Keen listener of your pod for a long time. So it's good to actually sit down and chat in person. So you talked about that during with lockdown. We'll get that out of the way first. We'll clear that elephant in the room out of the way. What's been happening with you since March?
Business-wise, it's been, you know, obviously a transition. I was doing mainly events. I'd come off the back of a mini tour, I suppose. So I'd done, I think, 10 venues or something like that in February time, January, February, and then a lot of corporate stuff. So it went from doing all these events to suddenly the event industry being gone. And that was most of my income at that time. So I just transitioned online professionally. First thing I did when all the lockdown kicked in was put out a free journaling course, journaling and meditation. And I was kind of surprised by the uptake. There was 8,000 people went through that. So that gave me a bit of purpose because like everyone else, I was a bit disillusioned with everything. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I've been running courses. I've been running groups. I've been getting into doing more men's work. I've been doing a lot of coaching. It's been an interesting couple of months professionally. I really feel like I've evolved in terms of how I present. I've gone from a guy that was going in with a plan as to what I was going to talk about for two hours to now having done maybe 300 hours of Zoom coaching over the last 12. No, it's more now, isn't it? It's a couple of months. I feel very comfortable now jumping on a call with 100 people and saying, hey, if anyone wants to turn on their mic and talk about what's going on for them and where they're challenged, let's do it. So that's been the professional side of things. Personally, like everyone else, I think ups and downs, there's been little, you know, dips in my own mental health, just with experience in isolation and loneliness here and there. But for the most part, it's been an interesting time. It's you know, I've got to look at things I hadn't been looking at. I've got to slow down. It's been the longest I've ever lived at home before in my own house and not be traveling. So I'm grateful for the few months it's been, for what it's been. I've gone through a lot of different courses myself to upskill. I started learning a bit of Spanish.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that because I think people look to you as kind of the one of the best providers of courses in Ireland. So you do them yourselves. You actually go and study other courses because there's something literally, I started one yesterday online. I was like, I need to stimulate the brain. I need to be like, instead of putting stuff out all the time, I need to be taking stuff in.
Oh, dude, I'm a maniac. I'll be going through probably up to 12 courses at any one given time. So I've gone through everything over the last couple of months from, I think I'm a licensed wedding or marriage counselor to some people now. I'm doing a diploma in logotherapy, which is Viktor Frankl's work. I did a diploma in cognitive behavioral therapy, counseling. I'm doing some stuff with compassionate inquiry, which is around addiction with Gabor Maté. I'm doing a 200-hour meditation teacher training, a lot of relationship work with the Gottman Institute. What I do for work is obviously coaching and speaking, but it's genuinely my passion. I'm obsessed by all that stuff. And, you know, I go through phases where I take on a huge amount and then I try to take a step back and really reflect on like, what does this actually mean to me? Because if I do a course on relationship counseling, I'm not interested in the academia of it all and the research studies and stuff. I'm just interested in, right, what do I take from this that I can apply in my own life? Mm. And then I can talk about on the podcast. You know, if you listen to my podcast, you'll kind of hear that hopefully at least it comes across that I'm just sharing experience as opposed to lecturing or telling anyone what they should be doing. So sometimes I get too heady and I'm taking on too much noise, and then I've got to step back and, you know, a bit more meditation, a bit more time outside. But, it's important to be constantly upskilling. I think, you know, if you're passionate about what you do, that's just a part of it. And, I stand on the shoulders of giants. So anything smart that I ever say came from someone else, that's for sure. I think if I've got a talent, it's just being able to put stuff across in a way that's maybe storytelling or analogy based, where it just kind of clicks with people. So
I think curation is such an important skill. There's so much noise. We talked about it briefly before. There's so much going on. Hit me with that stat on the newspapers per day, because that blew my mind.
Yeah, I was watching Tony O'Regan, I believe is how you pronounce. He was a hurler back in the day for Galway, and now he's involved in psychology. He'd be a good guy to get on the podcast if you haven't had him on. But I saw him doing a presentation in Croke Park. It's up online on YouTube, and it was encouraging people to consider how they're coaching kids and teenagers. And what he basically said was, we take on the equivalent of 174 newspapers worth of information every day before 7 o'clock. And so he said, if you consider the teenagers coming to you have taken on so much noise, and now you're trying to give them instructions, you're telling them you need to do this and you need to do this and you need to do this. So one of his recommendations for coaching was, keep it simple, keep it positive, you know, stuff like that. So yeah, it's a crazy world where, you know, I wrote an email about this the other day, and that we're blessed to have such access to information and to stimulus and to entertainment and everything else. However, on the flip side, we're having bigger mental health issues than ever before. There's this idea of being, you know, drowning in information, but thirsty for knowledge. Mm. And I think part of that is, again, as I say, there's no point me going through all these courses and just like taking on all this noise and never actually applying it. So I definitely take a step back and I ask, well, where is this relevant to my life? Sometimes it's not. Sometimes I sign up to a course and I'm like, I'm not going to sit through 20 hours more of this. This just doesn't click for me right now. But yeah, simplification, man. I think it's the key to everything, right? Business, health, wellness. In a world where people are overwhelmed, if you can take away some of that overwhelm, I think, and make people think they can do things they didn't otherwise believe, that's a skill for any of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I find that myself. I just trying to limit my time with the phone. The phone is my Achilles heel. It definitely is. It's just always there. And as you say, we're blessed. I had this conversation with someone, went for a swim the other morning with someone. We had this exact conversation going, we're blessed to have that at our fingertips. Imagine you said that to yourself 15 years ago. You know, you'd have a virtual assistant in your kitchen in Alexa, and you'd have every bit of information you wanted, or every video or podcast, or access to all these people. The fact that me and you were chatting here today, you know, but trying to balance that with stuff you talked about earlier in terms of, you know, back to the days of when we didn't have that. How do you balance the two? How do you manage your information flow, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask you.
Not particularly well at times. I'm a little bit of a feast or famine kind of guy. So like, again, I'll take on a huge amount. So I'm not saying this is how it should be done, but I might go through a phase of a month or two of just immersing myself in content and stuff like that. And then really taking a step back and letting it process. I always feel like information is a bit like food, in that it's not that you just take it in and it's there. It's been digested. Food has been digested. And so whatever I eat today for the next couple of hours or next couple of days is going to have an impact on how I feel. And I think the same is true with information. So if you like watch a horror film, there's a good chance it's back there in the psyche and you might have nightmares that night. The same is true if I take on, you know, I watch a lecture about relationships and I take on a certain amount intellectually as I watch it, but then viscerally over the coming weeks, maybe I feel something. It's like, wow, that lands now. I actually see that in my life. That's the idea of having an insight, right? When you hear something that just resonates with you, it's like when someone tells you a joke, they don't have to intellectually understand it. You're just like, oh, that's fun. You just get it. You're just laughing. And when you're watching a lecture and something really connects with you, you don't need to take a note on that because you just feel it. So in terms of balancing, I definitely try to journal a lot. So I always tell people, look, if I'm reading a book about Richard Branson, or, you know, anyone who's amazing at business or amazing at health or whatever it is, and I'm reading that and I read about him doing something cool and I'm like, oh, that's amazing. And then I just keep reading. Mm-hmm. I've kind of skipped over something that could be worth looking at. So I'll read until I get an insight and then I close the book and then I take out a pen and paper and I write about it. And I'm like, how do I integrate that into my own life? okay, so Branson had this experience where he charters a plane because there was a problem. You know that story?
Yeah, but, how he started Virgin Airlines. Yeah. Love that story. So then
I'm like, oh, that's great. But if I'm going to be inspired by that, what do? I take out pen and paper and ask, like, where could I bring more creativity to my business, to my life? What's the problem that I see that I want to have someone else fix for me? But in theory, I could come in and actually, you know, be the guy that provides that. Aside from that, I try to meditate or do breath work every day just to create a bit of space, try to get out more in nature. What else do I do? I do talk therapy just by talking to friends and peers.
I think that's underrated. I think that's, jump back quickly on 2 points. I do the exact same thing. All my books here, they're all destroyed with pen marks and underlines. And what I've started doing is that Ryan Holiday method. I'm just looking over my cue cards, start writing them out on cue cards, flashcards. Yeah. Oh, I love him. Oh, I think he's very good. Very, very good. The Marginella he talks about, I started doing that. And it's amazing because I found I was like blitzing through books. I was like, oh, yeah, another one done this week. And I'd be like, wait. And someone might ask me, who wrote that? And you're like, it'll come to me. And you've taken not even the author's name out of it. You've read it and you've consumed it. But like exactly what you say. Well, how do you apply that? And it's not like you have to apply every book. Sometimes you can just read for fun. But yeah, I found I was just consuming and not practically applying. And there's so many great lessons. It's the cheapest education I think you never have.
Something then that I don't know where I heard this, but it really kind of made sense to me was, we're almost afraid of boredom now because we're so addicted to distraction. And there's actually a healthy thing about boredom, because when I'm bored, I can either think of creative ways of making my life less boring. Maybe I get an insight about, oh, I'm bored. So here's the thing. Any feeling that comes up for us, there's two options when a feeling comes up. One is we do something to escape the feeling and run away from it as quick as possible, which is an addiction. Mm-hmm. The other thing is we ask, well, what's this feeling here for? So let's say I feel bored and my addiction is to pick up my phone and scroll the phone. I haven't really done anything with that boredom. I've just temporarily masked it and put a bandaid over it. Whereas if I sit with the boredom and I'm like, why am I bored? It could be, well, I'm not fulfilled in my work. Then I can do something with that. It doesn't have to be that I quit my job. It could be I upskill. It could be I take on a hobby outside of that. But there's, I mean, you look at all these great thinkers that they talk about over the years, they all had time in their day where they went for a walk without any distraction. And they almost welcomed that boredom, because in the boredom, we get new insights and new ideas and new ways of seeing things. Whereas if we're always stimulated with external noise, your creativity kind of dips and disappears, because can't create from a full canvas. You've got to empty the canvas, I suppose, to some degree.
I think that's brilliant. You don't give yourself that time to just think. Just go, what do I think about that? Just take something in and go, what do I really think about that? Do I agree? Whereas, as you say, it's just grab the phone, scroll. Oh, there's an hour gone. You're like, whoa, where'd that go?
Like, I'm bad as anyone on the phone. Like, I'm pretty bad on the phone. Earl Nightingale, who will be one of my heroes, that guy's incredible. He was the guy that founded the personal development industry effectively, wrote the book, The Strangest Secret, which I always recommend, a really simple book.
What's it called? The Strangest Secret?
Strangest Secret. It's from the 50s. I have it there on record player. I bought a record player just to have the old vinyl of it. And a really, really simple concept. He basically is saying, look, your mind is like a field where you're planting seeds, and the seeds that you're planting will have an impact on your life. But one of the exercises he recommends in one of his programs is every day you sit down with a blank piece of paper for 30 minutes and you write about all the ways you could provide a better service through your business. And it's like, that's not a sexy exercise to think about, but imagine the insights you'd have. He says, look, 90% of those ideas can be trash, but one of them could be €1 million idea. So might be a nice little challenge for anyone listening to this. Maybe it's 10 minutes a day for the next 10 days. You just write down and ask, how could I provide a better service to my current customers?
It's funny. I'm doing that at the minute. I'm doing like a September challenge, going one idea per day. It can be anything. And it's actually damn hard. It can be a new business idea. It can be a way to improve your business. It can be anything, any random idea you have. Just come up with one new idea a day. And it's actually, I'm really enjoying it. I'm not last night when I was like, it was 9 o'clock and I was like, shit, I have no idea for today. But you have to force yourself. And I think it's that thing, isn't it? Make that time and go, right, I have to be accountable every day for the next 30 days and just do something that pushes you.
Something that could be useful there, I think, is sometimes with business, we see what we provide as, you know, offering a solution in one specific area, and we forget about the branches of the tree that kind of go off that area. So, for example, like when I used to have a gym, the obvious thing that I was solving a problem with was people wanted to get fit. But then maybe the less obvious things was people wanted a social circle. Mm-hmm. People wanted, I don't know, to go and try new activities with people that were like-minded. There was all these other things that people wanted. And so if I was the fitness guy that was always obsessed with the fitness and just like, how do I learn how to show more different types of push-up? It's like, that's not very creative. Whereas if I start thinking about, so I do an exercise called problems and prescriptions, and I list all the potential problems that my client faces. So back in the day, it was my client's got a couple of kids. She doesn't want to be cooking five different meals for the family. So one of her problems is time and prepping a meal that suits everyone. I think it's an interesting way of thinking about your customers is what are their 10 biggest fears, frustrations, problems, struggles in life, not just with this specific area that you're helping them in, but across the board.
I like that actually. It's really good. So let's go back into business. You talked about it there. Like, bring me right back to the start. Pat Dively, the entrepreneur, where did it start?
Where it started was, I was only looking at this the other day. When I was 11, I started a wrestling website. It's still up there on my dad's Aircom account. It's cringeworthy.
I love these stories.
I was 11. I was using Dreamweaver or something like that back in the day. Built a website on my dad's Aircom account. It's called WWF Dively.
It's still up there. I love it. Self-branding even back then.
Yeah.
You knew what was coming.
the last post on it was when I was 13. I think it was 2003. And it says, due to my busy time schedule, and bear in mind I'm 13.
No
at the time,
way.
I've got to sell the website. We'll take €20 or £20 or your closest offer. So,
I love this.
So that was, I don't know. I was always interested in the internet since the internet came about. But then the fitness thing was the first thing in life that gave me confidence as a teenager. I was bullied a bit as a kid. And I think when I started lifting weights and doing martial arts, that really kind of made me, I found myself to some degree, I never liked team sports. I never felt like I fit in. I've always struggled with that a little bit. And the individual stuff, you know, I found an identity, I suppose, through fitness. And I decided that was what I wanted to do. But obviously when you go back, I'm 32 now, you go back, 14 years to finishing school. There wasn't an industry for fitness in Ireland. The couple of people was, I suppose, Carl Henry would have been known. Paul Byrne up in Dublin. Those were the two guys. But outside of that, there wasn't much happening in fitness. So I wanted to become a fitness guy always, but I just didn't think there was an industry for it. I went and I studied arts, which was something I had no interest in. And every summer on my J1 visa, I would actually go out to the States, to California, and I trained as a cage fighter.
Brilliant.
That was my dream. So I lived in a gym. I trained three times a day. I cleaned the gym three times a day.
Incredible. Where did you train?
It was called San Diego Undisputed. I trained with Dominic Cruz, was one of the main guys there.
Oh, wow.
War Machine, who's a very controversial character that's now in jail for life. who else was there? I would have met Rampage Jackson, a bunch of people back in the day. And I met a mentor out there. He was 10 years older than me. So I was 18, he was 28. And he was a fitness guy. He introduced me to kettlebells, introduced me to functional training, which wasn't a thing at the time. And he actually committed suicide not long after I came home. And it really rattled me at that time, being 18. I couldn't get my head around it. I saw this guy that I looked up to and I saw so much potential in him, but he was just struggling in life. And it prompted me to kind of look at my own life. And I was studying arts. I had no interest in geography or economics. I wasn't showing up. I was drinking a lot. I was lost in life really at that stage. And I started pursuing the fitness thing again on the side. I became a personal trainer on the side. Then I moved to England, did a master's in exercise and nutrition science just to upskill. And anyway, long and the short, I moved to Dublin in 2009, thinking I'm going to be a celebrity trainer. I'm going to be like Paul Byrne and Carl Henry, and I'm going to train all the models and people are going to know me. And looking back, it's, you know, again, I'm embarrassed in a way, but it's also like I'm compassion for my younger self, because I had no self-esteem, I had no self-confidence. And I always felt if I achieve things and people believe in me, then eventually I'll believe it myself. Failed with that business in Dublin. Just couldn't get it off the ground. Didn't know anything about business. Didn't have any network. Didn't have the work ethic. You know, so many things. Just wasn't ready. And I moved back to Galway, tail between my legs, completely broken, because everyone had told me there was no industry for fitness. And I was adamant I was going to prove everyone wrong. And then of course you're coming back, borrowing money from my dad on Christmas Eve to get the bus home, and just feeling really like a failure. Struggled for 6 months trying to figure out like, where am I going from here? I actually applied to go back and study physiotherapy. My parents were really encouraging that, saying, look, you can work with people in a similar capacity, but at least you'll have a job prospect. And I got a position to study physiotherapy, and that was my light at the end of the tunnel. And then that fell through and I was like, oh, fuck. And so I decided I'd try the fitness thing one last time, and I started down here on the local beach with 5 clients. And the long and the short of the story was, within a year, I had 500 clients here in Galway. I brought out a book, I had opened a gym, and then I took it online. And in the space of 4 or 5 years, it went to 20,000 clients globally on online fitness courses, wrote a couple of more books.
What changed, team. Pat? What changed in that time? Because that, you know, that sounds everything, like, everything. You know, you've gone from the lowest low to just suddenly things click. I'm always fascinated by those moments in people's lives whereby, you know, they might have been trying something for a very, very, very long time. And then suddenly there's that spark or that X factor, whatever that is. What changed for you?
Everything changed. I mean, the older I get, the more, like, I think as you get older, you start to become a bit wiser to the fact that there was so many people there. It wasn't just me. Like, so many people supported me all the way up that I was very lucky. I was in the right time. I was at the right place. Again, I had a bit of the knack from using the internet back when I was young, and now Facebook was coming. No one was using Facebook in that way, the way I was using it at that time in Ireland for fitness. The biggest thing that changed was when I was in Dublin, I was obsessed with getting 100 clients. I just, for some reason, decided I'll be successful when I have 100 clients. I was thinking about the money I'd have and how well known I'd be and how easy life would be. And I was obsessed with 100, and I didn't recognize as a young guy that to get to 100, you've got to first get to 1 and then 2 and then 3. I was obsessed with the end destination, but not in any way willing to commit to actually doing the work. And then when I came back to Galway, and when you lose everything and you're completely broken emotionally and you're completely lost, any little win is a big win in your mind at that time. And so I just developed this momentum. When I had 5 clients, I was just completely lit up by it. I was so excited by it, and it showed me what was possible. And that changed. My work ethic changed. What else changed? Everything. I mean, life is interesting in that when you've got a negative headspace and you're in a negative headspace, it can very easily pull you down and you just get caught up in a lot of negative stuff. And then it can be one thing that changes everything. Like one little positive day can make you feel like, oh, I'm doing okay actually. And then there's another day and another day. And it was kind of that. People rallied around me and kind of bought into my story. I was quite open about how much I was struggling when I started this thing, and I think people related to that. The other thing that changed was, when I was in Dublin, I was a douchey personal trainer that you know, it was about me. It was about, like, I want to be successful and I want to be in the newspapers for being a celebrity trainer. And so I would stand next to a client in the gym and just count their reps and tell them to eat broccoli and chicken, and that was who I was. And when
that
you
lose
work.
It all,
does it work? It doesn't work as a business model. When I came back to Galway, it was like I recognized my own struggles, and I was like, Jesus, if I'm struggling, maybe other people are struggling too. And so now it was about the person in front of me. It wasn't about me anymore. It wasn't about training models or training famous people. It was, there's millions of people in the world that are struggling with their mental health or their physical health, or they just, I wanted to be the guy that got people off the couch. I didn't want to train elite people anymore. I wanted to just be the guy that got people their start. So yeah, everything changed. I went to mentors. I recognized that my way wasn't working, and so I had to drop my ego and learn from other people. I worked like a madman. That was another thing that changed. I developed a work ethic. Everything changed.
That's an interesting transition, though. And I think especially now, it's very relevant for people who may be having a tough time, especially these couple of months, to kind of look at, you know, stories like that, or maybe recognize things that they've been doing incorrectly, or just circumstances have changed them, and how to actually bounce back. I think that's the biggest thing for the next few months for people is just how to kind of go, okay, last 6 months have been garbage. What can we do in the next 6 months? So it's interesting to see that mindset shift. And then what happened next? It sounds like you were flying at that stage. You were training people locally, then online, and you're leveraging social media. So what happened with that business then? Where did that go next?
What happened with that? I mean, you know, I talk about that it's interesting. I feel like a walking cliche sometimes, but from 24 to 28, my whole life changed in terms of, I went from broke and not being able to pay the rent to buying a house and buying a car and building this business and becoming somewhat known, doing a bit of TV and radio, bringing out three books. Everything changed externally. But then I crashed at about 27, 28. I just felt burnt out. Everyone around me had warned me, like, you're going too fast. You need to slow down. You know, you're only young. You've loads of time. You don't need to be going at the pace you're going at. And I just crashed. I was struggling a lot with anxiety. I struggled with, I suppose, depression to some degree. And I hit a real low point at 27, 28. And it really threw me, because I'd been in that position before, but when I'd been there before, I was always able to point to things to blame it on, you know? So like when I failed with a business and moved back in with my parents at 24, I was like, that's why I'm depressed. Now I was 27, 28, and I had everything I thought I ever wanted. I ticked every box. I'd met some of my heroes. I'd just done so many things that I was excited by, and I was still depressed. And I said, Jesus, if I have it all and I'm still depressed, there's obviously something wrong with me. So at that time, you know, I started changing my lifestyle, and I went from a guy that was obsessed with my next goal to being a guy that just wanted to enjoy his day to day. So I took up meditation and jujitsu and journaling, and I changed my own lifestyle. But one of the things I recognized was the fitness thing just wasn't interesting to me anymore. And so, you know, much to my accountant's discontent, I just walked away from it pretty much overnight with the fitness. I had a guy working for me in my gym. I gave the gym to him. I said, you can have this. You can put your name above the door. It's not really my thing anymore. People were saying, keep your name above it, but my energy just wasn't there for it. Initially, I went from being in the gym all the time to I'd started delivering some talks. And I said, if I can go to the gym once a week and I can see each of my clients once a week, they'll understand that's enough. But when it got to the point where I didn't even like going in that one day a week, I was like, I'm just fooling myself and everyone here, because beyond just being about fitness, I was telling my clients, you know, do things you enjoy and you know, make the most of life and all this kind of stuff. And here I was forcing myself to go in. So I walked away from that. And not a smart move from a business standpoint, but it definitely felt liberating over time.
How did you reach that decision? Because that's something we chat about quite a bit on the pod, is if an entrepreneur has kind of had, you know, a very good job, exactly like you've had here, or they've been with a big company, how did you make that decision? I think that's the hardest thing for people. I have commitments, I have a job, I have a wife, I have a house, I have kids. You know, how did you make that decision? Because obviously you were walking away from something very, very lucrative and something you'd probably dreamt about having for a long time.
Yeah, I'm always like conscious of, like, everyone listening to this is in a different life, you know, different position in life. I was single, no kids, no partner. So like there was definitely that to it. And sometimes people say, oh, it's fine for you.
That old excuse people use.
It's easy to say that. And sometimes people think when they make a lot of money that, like, so they'll have the freedom to retire. But money's like a trap. It's like the golden handcuffs. You think you don't want to walk away when you're making loads of money. But for me, the other side of it is, like, I talk about the head and the heart, and the idea that your heart always knows what's right, and your gut and your intuition, like, it always knows what's right. We talk about overstimulating ourselves earlier on. When I'm overstimulated, I can distract myself from what my heart is saying. But when there's those quiet moments when I'm on my own, or I go for a hike, or I try to meditate, and I know inside that, like, this is not the right move for me, I think what happens is the heart will guide you if you give it a bit of space, but then your head will come in and it'll give you 100 reasons to stay in the uncomfortable position. Like, you know, you might be 10 years into a relationship and your heart just knows it's not working anymore, but your head starts telling you, well, what if I don't meet someone else? What if I don't get to start a family? And, you know, you'll justify it to yourself. And so for me, it was just a case of, like, I suppose to some degree where we struggle is you can be inspired to action, or you can be in such a desperate place that you kind of have to take action. And for me at 24, my life became so desperate that I had to change something. And I guess again at 28, you know, when I have everything I thought I ever wanted, I'm going to a psychiatrist trying to figure out what's wrong with me. That was another desperate position. It was kind of like, you can't outrun your problems anymore, Pat. You got to, like, just face these things and, like, make some changes. So I just knew, I think you just know. And you got to be honest with yourself about what's most important to you. You know, again, the people that say it's fine for you.
I always find that line so, I hate it. It's so lazy. It's such a, people are letting themselves down so quickly with that. They just give up, go, oh, well, I can't because, well, you never will. You never will then.
That's it, about the letting themselves down. There was a lady on to me a couple of months ago, and she said, oh, it's fine for you. You get to do your jiu-jitsu and this, that, the other. I've got kids and I can't do that. And I felt like you're fighting for a limitation there, because I'm guessing you don't want to do jujitsu. Why worry about that? And if you really want to do jujitsu, I'll babysit your kids for you. I'd love to see you go and do jujitsu, you know, but there's always a way to make things work. Yeah. And again, I say that equally recognizing that I have a different life, like to a lot of people. And some people, some of the people I work with, their kids have disabilities and they just don't have freedom, and they can't plan their week because this thing's changing all the time. But again, this is an important point to think for us all. Again, when we're reading books, when we're going to seminars, when we're listening to podcasts, is never listen to someone and say, that won't work for me, or that won't work in my town, or that won't work for my business. Instead, ask the question, how could I make that work in some small capacity if it feels right to you? So I was thinking about this recently. I was saying, here's two little examples on this. Let's say there's five people in an office and none of them like being there anymore, but they've kind of resigned to the fact that, you know, I have to be here. You know, I've got commitments. I've got this, that, and the other. One of them decides to start studying a course on the side. So 2 or 3 hours a week, they start studying something in the evening. A year from now, that person is in a position where they can transition into something new. The other four aren't, because they decided, I'm stuck where I am. I can't do anything. And then the other side of that is, there was a story a couple of years ago, a friend of mine told me, all the boys were working in a factory back in the day and they hated it. They just go in with a frown on their face, hating the fact that they were there. And there was one guy that would always turn up with a smile, despite the fact he didn't like the work. And they said, how do you enjoy this as much as you do? He says, I don't enjoy this. And they said, why do you smile? He says, well, when I show up to work, I'm putting money aside. And that money I'm putting aside is going to someday put me in a position where I can go and have my dream job working in a safari in Africa.
Oh, I love that.
One by one, each of the lads finished up in the factory, went working in different jobs. This guy was the last man standing there. And a couple of years later, they reached out to him. Where are you? I'm in Africa. I've moved to Africa. I'm doing my thing. And so the logic in that and the lesson in that is, sometimes we all have this story of I'll be happy when. Mm. And so again, if I'm in the corporate world, and I always use that example because it's just kind of something I hear quite a bit. If I'm in the corporate world and I'm thinking, oh, I'd love to be a yoga teacher. Sometimes people think that the dream starts the day that you become the yoga teacher. To me, the dream starts when you go into work the next day and you're like, I don't love what I'm doing right now. However, where I am right now is allowing me to put 10 euro a week aside, 100 euro a week aside. That is feeding my dream of being the yoga teacher. Your dream starts when you decide, I'm going to do this. And so I think, again, irrespective of your position in life and where you are, you can dream and you can kind of start thinking about, what can I do? Not what can't I do? And I know this all sounds a bit, you know, airy fairy to some people, but it's just a reality. It's all based on our decisions. What do I want? Where do I want to be in 12 months? What's one thing I can do to move myself? It's the compound effect. It's, again, it's probably, you know, we talk about what changed for me. Nothing really changed in a heartbeat. Everything was little steps, little steps, little steps. I used to use that analogy of the spiral staircase. And the spiral staircase analogy is, you can't see 10 steps ahead, but you can see the next step. So you take that and then you have faith that as you take your next step and your next step, but we have to be willing to step. There's this idea that, like, there's three decisions in life. The best decision you can make is the right decision. The second best decision you can make is the wrong decision, because you learn from it. The worst decision you can make is indecision. So that's me complaining about my situation, but not doing anything to change it. There's certain things in my life I don't particularly love, but I either accept them for what they are and I recognize they're not a priority, so I'm not going to do anything to change it, or I change it, but I'm not going to wallow in self-pity thinking it's so unfair that I have to put up with X, Y, or Z, you know?
I think you're dead right. And the thing you said there about it, the journey starts the day you make the decision, I think that's correct. I think the also thing is, start on that journey. Don't think of, oh, the day I become a yoga teacher, then I've made it. What if you hate being a yoga teacher? I always say that to people. It's like, people always reach out to me and go, I want to start my own business. But I'm like, just start something small. Start something really tiny. Start the smallest business you can find. Run that and then see, is that something you want to do? Because I think there is that element of, I'll be happy when I have my own business. Maybe you hate being an entrepreneur. Maybe you hate being a yoga teacher, you know. But you have to try and you have to start. I love the thing about time as well. I don't have time. Or replace with, it's not a priority. I can't remember who said that. I might actually have even been one of your podcasts, but I love that.
The other thing is, people will ask, you know, if I went to Richard Branson a couple of years ago to meet him, who was my business hero, and everyone's asking him questions and stuff, and everyone's looking to him like, oh, he's made it. But I'm sure if you were to ask him about like the happiest times of his life, it was actually the growth. And I think about people ask me sometimes, they're like, what's it like, you know, to have a couple of hundred people at a seminar and like all this kind of stuff, or what advice would you give me at this moment in time? And the advice is always, whatever step you're on in the journey, appreciate where you are. And that might sound simple, but when I look back and I had five clients on my local beach, there was pros and cons. The pros were I had five clients, I could give them so much attention, I could over deliver. I knew them all by name. I knew their partners by name. I really knew them. Fast forward a couple of months later, now I've got 100 clients. There's pros and cons. The pros are like the cons of having five clients is you don't have much money. The pros is you get to know these people personally, but you can enjoy that process. 100 people. It's like there's always going to be ups and downs and things. Like people think when they win the lotto, everything's going to be perfect. No, when you win the lotto, your family are going to be melting your head trying to get money out of you, and you're not going to be able to trust anyone anymore. So there will always be challenges. So don't think that someday when you achieve whatever it is you want to achieve, when I become a yoga instructor, everything's going to be perfect. No, you're going to be stressed then because it's hard to pay the bills when you're a yoga teacher, because it's not as easy as you think, and it's not as zen as you think when you're actually running the business. So that's not to say don't do it. That's to say, appreciate where you are on the journey, know where you're trying to go, and just progressively make those little movements.
I got a segue here. I just literally, it's a podcast, so no one can see what I'm holding up. So I'm going to say I'm holding up Bridget Branson's first book, Losing My Virginity. That is the best book I've ever read. It's one of the best stories. I love it. I'm obsessed with that book. I've read that, I'd say 10 times. It's such a good story because the early days were scrappy and messy and fun. And yeah, I love that book. That inspired me in so, so, so many ways and still does. How did you end up meeting Richard Branson? We have to hear that story.
So I was in a mastermind group over in the States back in 2015, probably. One thing I recognize, and you know, it's important probably again for us all, is the old cliches, you are who you surround yourself with and stuff like that. And, you know, I was growing this business in Galway and I was looking to mentors over in the States because I wanted to expand all the time. I went from looking up to people in Ireland to not seeing anything that was kind of driving me forward. I felt like I'm doing as much as anyone is here in the fitness space. And so I wanted to look abroad. I wanted to go to the States and be around people that were running big businesses and could give me ideas and could give me inspiration. So I joined a mastermind over there. We'd meet every 3 months. We'd go to different locations. 100 entrepreneurs would come together. It was a cool concept. There was 3 days every time. The first day was charity based. So they bring in a local charity and us 100 entrepreneurs would come together and brainstorm. How can we best support this charity? And then we'd give them a $10,000 donation between a lot of us. Then the second day was about business growth. So we'd look at business growth strategies. And the third day was just adventure. We'd go and we'd do cool things. And you'd obviously connect with people.
That's great.
Yeah. It was really nice because they kind of said, look, you spend a lot of your life working in an office as a business owner. We don't want to put you in an office for 3 days just brainstorming. And you really develop the proper bonds when you're out kayaking or just doing random stuff, you know?
I love that template, actually. It's a really clever thing. I must write that down because that sounds like something great to put together.
Maverick 1000 was the name of that group.
And what a name.
Yeah.
Maverick 1000. I love it.
Their vision was to bring together 1,000 Maverick entrepreneurs. And again, it wasn't just about being a whiz kid in business. It was about, am I making a contribution to the world? So that year I had raised $250,000 with my groups for local charities. And that was kind of my piece that I, you know, that was my contribution piece. And so I was brought into that group. And then as part of that group, we got to go to Necker Island, which is Branson's Island, and spend a couple of days there. And then off the back of that, we got an email and they said, the Bransons would like to invite you to do a triathlon in Italy with the family for a charity. And we all got this email, but only 3 of us took them up on the offer. So a couple of months later, 50 of us, like, I don't know, 10 of the Branson family, some of the royals, and then just a couple of us schmucks were out in Sicily. For
Who were the lads?
Yeah, honest to God, there was an experience. There was one of the mornings, like I say, such a small group of people, and we just 4 days together in Sicily. One day we cycled, and 2 days we cycled, one day we swam, one day we ran. But it was one day I was talking to this girl and she was getting ready for the swim. It wasn't like a formal triathlon. It was all pretty laid back. And she was putting on flippers. Is that what they're called? The things on your feet? And I says, you can't wear them. You'll wreck your hips trying to swim with those things. And someone pulled me aside and they're like, you can't talk to the princess like that. Princess Beatrice, it turned out to be. I didn't know what was going on.
That's hilarious.
But yeah.
Why do you think so few people said yes? Sorry, just that really struck me there because in a high performing group of entrepreneurs, only 3 people said yes. Why do you think that was?
It's funny, sometimes people play to their strengths, right? So oftentimes business owners are very good at business, but then they drop the ball with their relationships or their health or their different areas. So maybe there was an element of the confidence they had for business and finances maybe wasn't there in fitness. That could be part of it. I mean, the other part maybe just didn't suit their schedule or whatever else. Again, there was a charity aspect to that. So you had to raise money to be involved. But I don't know. It was kind of strange. Yeah, 3 of us went from our group, from the couple of hundred that were in it. And
you quite literally could not buy that access. You could not. There's no price on that.
Well, it was the interesting things in terms of personal growth, because this transition period was around the same time that I was getting rid of the gym and I was a little bit lost and everything else. And when I was on Necker Island, it looked great. I actually did the Late Late Show on Friday, which was a dream of mine. And then I flew to Necker Island on Saturday. So it was just like this week that should have been on paper, like perfect. And the reality, like the picture went up, me and Branson on Necker Island at a fancy dress party having the crack.
I remember that picture. I remember seeing that picture.
So look amazing. And look, it was an amazing experience. But the thing that wasn't seen, I suppose, was when I arrived on Necker Island, my every self-doubt, all my insecurities, all my confidence issues from a kid that felt like he didn't fit in came up again. And I thought, I'm just a guy from Barna who runs a fitness business. What am I doing here? Everyone else is rich. Everyone else is this, that, and the other. And it was a free bar. So I just started tipping away at the drinks for the day. And I just got hammered, to be honest, like to make myself feel comfortable. And when I came back again in this like period of self-reflection, I'm like, Pat, you've done a lot. Like you've achieved a lot. You've helped a lot of people. You're doing good things. You've changed your life. You shouldn't feel like that around anyone. You should feel comfortable. You don't need to be comparing yourself. You'll always have someone richer than you to compare yourself to. You got to make peace with yourself. So I did a lot of work then, meditation, journaling, psychotherapy, all this kind of stuff. And when I went back to spend the couple of days with him on the triathlon, I went down one morning and it was just him there having breakfast. And he said, oh, young man, join me or whatever. So I sat down with him and chatting away to him, just like a normal person, you know, not taking him off the pedestal and everything else. And he said, how's it going for you? And I said, it's going well, but I forgot my cycling shorts. So I'm probably not going to be able to have kids after this whole experience. And he reached into his bag and he threw over a pair of cycling shorts. He says, I'm not wearing these today. You can wear these. And I didn't even think. I said to him, I hope they're clean, Richie. And then I was just like, nobody saw that, but it was just this nice moment for me where I was like, I've taken my heroes off the pedestal and I've put myself on the same level as everyone. So I'm not looking down on people or up to people anymore. I recognize we're all, again, some of these millionaires and billionaires that I thought had it all sussed have relationship issues, have health issues, have stuff that they don't want to address. We all have our, you know, and equally, sometimes I'd come back from those trips. I'd go to the States thinking I'm going to get the best insights in the world. I'd learn some stuff and then I'd come back and I'd bump into someone in my local village that's lived on a farm all his life and he'd give me greater insights. So we can learn from everyone. And I think you know, I learned that throughout my 20s as well, just to kind of take people off pedestals. And equally, look, when you're young, I guess you're a bit arrogant, right? So you think you know it all, particularly when you start seeing a bit of success. I was probably dismissive of people that were there to help me and were giving me advice and stuff because they didn't have a big name. So I didn't think their opinion was as important. So I learned a lot. I continue to learn a lot, hopefully.
How did you transition then from the gym business? Just go back to that briefly. How did you walk away and did you know what you want to do next, or did you know you just didn't want to do that?
So I had a fear of public speaking and, that was something I wanted to tackle. So I committed to doing 100 talks in a year for free around the country just to get comfortable speaking. So I'd speak in colleges, schools, small businesses, big businesses, community centers. I ended up speaking in an old lady's shed in Roscommon who told me she had a gym and I turned up. It's just her and her friends in the gym or in the shed. And at that time I was doing a kind of 60-minute talk, 15 minutes nutrition, 15 minutes training, 15 minutes mindset. I was getting more interested in mindset all the time. And so I did these, I ended up doing 77 or 88, I can't remember, I think it was 77 talks in the year. And this was again the time where I'm on the road, I'm on the telly sometimes, doing the daytime TV, and then other days I'm doing these talks. And then the couple of days I'm in Galway, I'm trying to pop my head in the gym, and there's just a lot happening. So I knew the speaking thing was appealing to me. And I think I had gone to Tony Robbins in 2015, maybe or 16. And I remember making the decision at that time. I was like, I want to be a coach. I want to make this transition. Because I found the workbook recently. It's sometimes interesting to look back on your reflections from years ago, the things that were once dreams or hopes or whatever. But I knew, and funnily, like when I stepped away from the fitness, I started doing these talks. Again, they started small and they got bigger over time. A lot of times people, you know, from the outside looking in, it looks like, oh, wow, you're doing great. You're doing these talks. The self-doubt and the kind of the thoughts that I had for the first three years up until even recently, I suppose, like it looks good on Instagram or whatever to have a room with people. But then your self-doubt surfaces and you think, oh, it would have been so much easier to stick to fitness and just help people get six packs and then bring people together than it is to try and
sell. Nationwide tour sounds incredible. Like that's, oh, Pat's doing a nationwide tour. Whoa, Pat's made it, you know, but it's really interesting. I think it's so valuable for people to hear that from you, you know, looking at someone like yourself who's done all this stuff and kind of going, even inside, you're still feeling that doubt. Cause I think we all feel that, especially as entrepreneurs, imposter syndrome is just flashing there every day.
It's huge. Yeah. There's days where I feel like the work that I do is the most important work in the world. Not me personally, but just the act of bringing people together to talk, to be open, to be vulnerable. And then there's days where I feel like if there's a recession, my industry is the first to go. So I have that self-doubt all the time, but it's kind of settled now the last 2 years, you know, as I've gotten to work with more companies and businesses and, you know, I've found my voice, I think. And I feel like when I first started speaking, it was funny, a couple of years ago, a lady came to me and she said, I'll be honest, I came to see Pat Dibbley talk. I didn't come to see Tony Robbins and because everything I was saying was somebody else's and I was crediting them. I was saying, as Tony says, she said that to me. And at the time I felt hurt, but then afterwards I thought, well, wow, that's the greatest compliment you could get paid. Cause she's saying, I want to see you. I don't want to see you feel like you have to be somebody else. Mm. So I took that to heart and, but those couple of years, again, from the outside looking in, and I can tell you this from, again, knowing people that are well known and knowing them on a personal level. And even in recent times, these people contacting me and saying, Pat, I'm completely lost at the moment, but I'm afraid to say it because I'm supposed to be a coach. I'm supposed to have it all together. I'm like, it's a global pandemic. Like allow yourself, you know, to be, it's just human because we connect on that level. I started doing these talks. I did a TEDx talk I've lost track of my timelines, but I just started doing talks, started getting brought into companies, doing my own sessions, doing a bit of coaching, running different masterminds. I've done a lot of things over the years because again, I think a mistake sometimes we make is we have a picture in our head of how it's going to look and then we just play it out that way. You got to throw enough muck at the wall and hope that some stuff sticks. So a lot of what I started doing just never got pursued because it just didn't work. And other things that I never thought would work, worked. Mm. And just one comes to mind back in the fitness days, just in terms of how interesting the marketing side of things can be. I used to run a women's fat loss program and a men's fat loss program online. I think the men's was called the Superhero, I don't know, program or something. And the women's was the Summer Slim Down. And there was a month where the Summer Slim Down was selling a little bit slower than usual. At its peak, there was 600-700 people going through those courses a month. And it had dropped off that month. So I changed the name of the Summer Slim Down to the Busy Mums Fat Loss Program. And I took the exact same program, but I changed some of the recipes so they were family friendly. And I took the workouts and cut them in half from 40 minutes to 20 minutes. Busy Mums Fat Loss sold like hotcakes. Mm. And it was just an interesting thing again in thinking that a lot of the people I speak to that are putting together online programs, they've spent 6 months putting the thing together. And I say, you'd be better off putting that thing out to market as quick as possible. Yeah. Put some people on it for free or for next to nothing. Ask them to give you feedback in a testimonial video. And you'll very quickly learn that the picture you have in your head about what this is going to look like is going to be very different to how it ends up. Don't spend 6 months wasting your time on this. Get it out there and learn on the go. People are afraid to learn publicly. And to, you know, that we've got this perfectionist mentality. My stuff is still very rough around the edges, you know? That's how you grow.
You've nailed the whole reason I started the podcast. This is the whole genesis of what I'm doing here, is that exact thing, is encouraging myself to learn, encouraging myself to be uncomfortable. I resonate a lot there about your fear of public speaking. In person, I'm very shy, very quiet, you know, but I'm doing a podcast, you know, so I found even since I'm doing this, I'm only doing this 16 months now, the changes in how I view myself as well is totally different. But I do stuff all the time. I do that little experiment going, let's try this. Mm. 99% of them won't work. You'll never hear about them again. But the one thing that I was like, oh, that works. So that's exact genesis behind the podcast. It's just start. Like, instead of doing a business plan, do one page and start the damn business.
Yeah, that it, you know, it ties in with what we talked about earlier with the whole story of it's okay for you or I'm not in that position. It's like, allow yourself to be in that position. Like, what can you do? And start from where you are. Mm. Last year, I had this concept that I was talking about in my talks about the 100 hours, your first 100 hours. And the thinking behind it was I'd started surfing. And again, I say in a talk, this was the story, actually. I started surfing and I was on a girl's podcast. And she said, oh, my friend is a professional surfer too. And I said, hold on a second now. I didn't say I was a professional surfer. I said, I started surfing. And then I told the story of my first surf lesson. I said, I drove down, I was on my own, and there was two groups getting their lessons. So one group was a bunch of 10-year-olds on a birthday party. The other group was a hen party. They're like, which group do you want to go with, Pat? And I'm like, oh, here we go. I said, I'll go with the hen party. And then I quickly changed my mind. I said, I'll go with the 10-year-olds.
Definitely.
So I marched down, I'm helping the 10-year-olds carry the boards down to the beach. And I bump into one of my teachers from school. And she's like, oh, we're so proud of everything you've accomplished. And now you're teaching kids to surf. And I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah, sure. And sure I am. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I got out there and I fell off the board for 2 hours. And then I came back sunburned back to Galway. And that was my surf experience. Mm. And the commitment that I made to myself that day was I'm going to get 100 hours of surfing in. And there's going to be no expectation of myself to be good at this, to look cool, to get up. But there's no expectation. Just show up for 100 hours and see what happens. And it made me think, right, just irrespective of your age and where you're at in life, because sometimes we think we're too old to do something. And when you say you're too old to do something, you're automatically comparing yourself to someone else because, you know, this idea that you're supposed to be married by a certain age is comparison. The idea that you've got to take up martial arts by a certain age, it's all comparison. And so I said, right, 100 hours over the course of a year is 2 hours a week. If people are a little bit lost in life, if someone's stuck in their job, if someone's in a rut in their relationship, if someone just feels like life's gotten a bit boring, what if you gave yourself 2 hours a week to do the thing that you've always thought about doing or always wanted to do? Learn the guitar, learn a new language, give yourself those 2 hours. If you can't do 2 hours a week, do an hour a week because you're going to be somewhere 2 years from now. You might as well be something, you know, you might, I don't know. I look at my phone there some days and I say, geez, I spent a couple of hours on social media. What could I have done with that time? You know,
yeah.
And life is precious. Just think, I just see it. I don't know. I see guys, even my age, I'm 32 now. And they just kind of almost give up. It's like, they just settle for what life has become. And again, I hope I don't sound judgmental when I say that. I want people to believe in themselves and respect themselves enough to go after the things they want to do. But the story with that surfing, the reason behind telling that story is it's not going to look cool for the first 100 hours. Mm. But for it to look cool someday and for you to feel like it's natural someday, you've got to do those 100 hours. It was a night out with my little brother last year. It's funny, I was out with my two brothers and we were outside a pub. And my brother, who was 19 at the time, starts speaking fluent Spanish to this girl on the street. And I look at my other brother, I was like, I felt like the worst brother in the world. I'm like, I didn't know he was studying Spanish. My
really?
Other brother goes, I live with him. I didn't know he was learning Spanish.
No way.
So we talked to him. We're like, how did you learn that? He's like, I watch Narcos and then I write down all the words. And for 6 months, he had been learning this. Now, that's not cool to see that 6 months of learning at home, but it's pretty cool to see your little brother chatting up a girl, you know, in fluent Spanish and just being able to impress people. So it's kind of the same thing. It's like, you have to be willing to learn in public. A lot of us are afraid to speak a new language because you look like a tosser when you're trying to like order a cup of tea in a different language and you're embarrassed because you're not getting it right. But you have to allow that. Yeah, I think it's Elizabeth Gilbert that wrote Eat, Pray, Love that talks about we need people in life who are willing to learn in public. Because again, when you try to do it behind closed doors, it just doesn't happen. I spoke to a guy, sorry, I'm talking a lot here, but I spoke to a guy.
That's what we're here for. People want to hear you, not me.
I spent a week with Wim Hof a couple of years ago in Poland. I met some really interesting, this is one of the best things about going on these events, right? As much as meeting Wim or meeting whoever it is, you meet some interesting, like-minded people on the courses. And there was a guy there from America, really, really accomplished guy in business. He owned multiple businesses, really nice guy. And he was just, I don't know, his type A, is that the way you would put it? He was working on 6 things at that time and he would do 10 minutes on each of those things. So 10 minutes of salsa every day, 10 minutes of Spanish, 10 minutes of juggling and a couple of other skills. And my challenge to him was, you can do 10 minutes a day of salsa at home. He had an app or something. He would do his steps at home. But I said, I would argue that if you were to go to a salsa club this weekend and do an hour in a proper salsa club, you'd learn more in that hour than you will in the next 5 months of, there's kind of a balance there of like, some of us throw ourselves in the deep end and we learn that way. Others of us learn behind closed doors and tip away. I think there's a balance between the two, because I'm someone that probably throws himself in the deep end, but then I struggle oftentimes with consistency. Mm. Whereas other people are very good consistency, but they don't push themselves into an uncomfortable position. I think if you can do both and recognize where you need both, it's important. Because again, I might be someone growing a business and I do the things every day, but then every now and then I've got to take a leap of faith. Mm. Equally, I can't just take leaps of faith and then not back it up with the consistent work. So
I need the answer to that, Pat. I had that exact conversation in my head this morning. I work out at home now in my gym. And I'm like, are you pushing yourself hard enough here? Do you need to go back and do classes? Because I used to train in SPG in Longmile Road there. And God, you'd push yourself incredibly hard. And then I started, obviously, with COVID and everything, started working out at home. And I'm like, oh, every day you're at it now, Gary, it's mighty. Yeah. How do you get that balance though? Because I literally, it's so weird you said that. I was literally going, do you need to be doing two classes a week, one class a week? How do you need to balance that? Because how do you find that level, or how do you know you need it?
I think it's just an interesting self-reflective piece for us all. I don't know what the answer is specifically, but I think it's an interesting one to ask yourself, like, which side of the spectrum do I tend to fall on? Because again, for me, I would definitely say that my struggle is consistency. Like, I've taken on so many things over the last couple of years, like I say, even the last year, surfing, rock climbing, Spanish, but I'm not, like, there's a lot of people that are masters. I'm not a master at many. I'm starting to master speaking, but outside of that, I'm okay at jiu-jitsu. I'm okay at climbing mountains. I'm okay. I'm not even okay at surfing. I'm crappy at surfing. I'm getting there with, you know, whereas that's one way of approaching it. The other way is you're very consistent with one or two practices. So I think it's just good to notice where your tendencies lie, because that's self-awareness, right? When I'm aware that I tend to lack consistency and I tend to be distracted by shiny lights, I can see that pattern coming up for myself. Equally, when I'm aware that I'm very consistent, but I don't tend to push myself, I can maybe see that coming up as well. So I think it's just keeping tabs on it. I don't think you have to have any set structure, but you know, for something like that, you could set yourself a challenge and say every 3 months I go and I do a PT session. Every month I go and do a PT session to have an honest reflection of where I'm at.
I think that's it. I think you need check-ins, and I think you need, like, you know, just regular check-ins to go, am I on the right path here? Because the consistency is everything. It's everything. No matter what you're doing, it's the podcast. I had the exact same mentality this, like, during lockdown. I was like, oh, I was wanting to do this and I want to do that and wanted to do the other. So I want to get the podcast here. And I was like, no, just do Mondays and Thursdays. Stop worrying about everything else. And suddenly I feel better. I suddenly know what I need to do. And I suddenly know you've done it or you haven't done it. There's no kind of like in the middle. So it's definitely trying to find that balance.
So for you, the leap of faith was starting the thing. And now the consistency is, you know, going with it all the time. It's an interesting kind of, interesting to see just how we are, what our natural tendencies are, right? It's like, again, you recognize it. Like I would see myself as an introvert. Recognizing that and being aware of that allows me to notice, where am I being an introvert? I've talked a lot on the podcast, funnily enough, about conflict resolution in recent times. We all live in patterns, right? So we've got different patterns that we go to and we think that we're thinking, but really we're just remembering. So when I got nervous on Necker Island, I think that it's 26-year-old Pat that's nervous. But no, it's 6-year-old Pat that felt like he didn't fit in. Yeah. And I'm just becoming that guy again. Because as a 26-year-old, if I was able to take a couple of breaths and be like, well, you know, I'm accomplished, I've achieved different things, I'm a cool guy, I'm a nice guy to be around, I'd be fine. But again, we go back to our patterns. We always go back to our patterns. So, you know, transitioning back to meditation where we touched on earlier, it's kind of like slowing things down so I can see what's happening within me. I'm not just on a loop all the time and not just going a million miles an hour where I'm completely unaware of what's happening. Bit of a tangent.
That's what we're here for. I just love, like we talked about before we start, my notebook's blank. There's no questions. There's no pattern. There's just a chat. And I think that's, I always learn by stories, and that's how I always like to do the podcast. It's just having a chat and learning by stories. And it seems to resonate with a lot more people. So kind of take me up. I'm kind of conscious of time. Just take me up to kind of present day. What are you working on? Because I think a lot of people would see you having transitioned out of the fitness and then would associate with you as your current business. So take me up to kind of today and present time.
Yeah. By some stroke of luck, I do a lot of corporate work now, which is something I never thought would be there for me. I makes me feel like an adult for once in my life. I work with a lot of the accountancy firms, the law firms. I've done work out in the Middle East and the States and the UK. So that's something I never expected. I do work on lots of different things, from like energy and stress management to, you know, resilience, obviously, is a big word that's been thrown around at the moment. But I do wellness programs, mental wellness. I talk about mental wellness as opposed to mental health. And my kind of thinking with that is all the things I talk about, whether it's breath work, meditation, journaling, self-care, these are all ways of looking after your mental fitness, we'll say, or your wellness. And that gives you a better chance in the long term with mental health. So it's to say, look, we'll all have bouts of depression in varying degrees throughout our lives. But when we do little things for ourselves on a consistent basis, hopefully we're just that bit more prepared when struggle and challenge comes up in our life. So I do a lot of corporate work, and then I do a lot of small group coaching. I don't do any one-to-one stuff. It's just not interesting to me, to be honest. I like to bring groups together because they bounce off one another. We all learn from one another. One thing I always tell my groups is that we're mirrors to each other. So when you get on a call and you talk about your struggles with, I feel a bit isolated and lonely this week, I'll hear a part of myself in you. Mm. And sometimes you can articulate it better than I can articulate it. And I just feel something. I'm like, wow, I didn't even recognize that was going on for me. And my big passion at the moment is men's work specifically. I've joined men's circles myself over the last couple of months. It's been really useful for me just to be in an environment where the way I would put it is that a lot of our friends see us in a certain light, and so it's difficult for them to see us beyond that, and so they're not going to challenge us in the same way as when you're in a group of impartial men. So if I'm in a group of men and I say my intention for the next couple of months is to really focus on my relationship and give a lot of time to my partner, and then I do check-ins every week, if I'm not doing what I said I would do, These other guys are not afraid to say to me, you're bullshitting yourself and you're bullshitting us. So like, because they've no invested interest, like it doesn't matter to them if I'm doing a lot of men's work. I feel like it's interesting. When I look back, the reason I started my fitness community back in the day was because I felt isolated and I didn't have a community of my own. And I only see that in retrospect. And the thing that I need now at this moment in my life that I don't have and I haven't had for the last couple of years is a strong circle of male figures around me that are, have that balance between being hungry and ambitious and wanting to go after things, but also being willing to let the guard down and be honest about how they feel. Because there's the idea of masculine and feminine energy. Masculine energy is go, 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 achieve things, get things done, tick the boxes, get to completion. And then feminine energy is more creative and flowy and enjoy the process, enjoy the journey. And men and women have varying degrees of both. So you'll meet a very masculine woman who's very driven and ambitious and trying to get things done. You'll meet a very feminine man who's maybe very artistic. And again, we all have varying degrees. And I want to meet and encourage guys to blend the two. Mm. Don't be afraid to talk about your emotions and recognize your emotions. Equally, don't be afraid to be a savage that goes after what you want. So that's definitely a passion I'm working on.
I think recognizing that, and I think you've nailed it there, but recognizing that we all have these needs for a narrative about ourselves. Oh, I'm an alpha, yeah. Or oh, I'm a creative, or oh, and it's, you're one, or, you know, it's just, I'm this or that.
Yeah.
No, you can be like 7 or 8 or 9, you know, depending on the day and the time and what you're doing and who you're with. I think, we talked about this before the pod started. I think that area is just needs something like your program so badly, because it's almost taboo in terms of men getting together and just not being men, but you know what I mean? Just having that open time to be both, to be masculine and feminine.
Yeah, we do these calls every Sunday night for 2 hours, and it's, you know, there used to be a bit of structure to it. Now it's kind of open forum. We do a bit of breath work to start. That's a nice way of grounding. And we kind of imagine men sitting around a campfire, and women did the same thing. There was groups of men back in the day where men came together and interacted in certain ways. And then women came together and interacted in certain ways, embraced who they were as men or as women. And then they came back together. And, there's a role for all these different things. But for me, at least, it's a sounding board. Where I can share what I'm struggling with. I always say, you know, when you talk about mental health, shame, anger, frustration, resentment, jealousy, bitterness, you know, all these feelings tend to live in the dark. They live inside of me. And when unexpressed, they just get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's like, you know, the stories that I play in my head that are disempowering become like horror stories the longer they live there, because they get more and more dramatic, more and more emotional. You know, the horrible thing that someone said to me at work gets more spiteful every time I replay
there.
It in my head.
You can't get it out. It just stays there.
And then you say it, and there's just a liberation and a freedom that comes with that. Maybe the shame that you have about something that you did that you know was wrong, and you say it out loud, and the other guys can say to you, yeah, look, I've done similar, and, you know, it's not justifying what you've done, but, you know, have a bit of compassion for yourself and use that as a learning experience rather than a reason to berate yourself. So it's just those conversations. I think it's important. I'm also writing a book on men's wellness, I guess, at the moment, that'll come out next year. So that's a bit nervous about going into, you know, that niche, because, you know, imposter syndrome again, who am I to do this? But, you know, all I'm doing is taking tools that have served me well throughout times where I've been completely lost in life, and also times where I've achieved things and you know, struggled. I still struggle from at times. And one thing I try to make clear to people is I haven't sussed it all. And the difference between me now versus me a couple of years ago was, when I had a bad day a couple of years ago, I thought there was something wrong with me and that would turn into a bad week and a bad month. Whereas now I have the same struggles, same challenges, same obstacles that come up. I'm just better able to handle them and kind of navigate through them and recognize all these emotions that we experience are like waves. They come and they go. But when you get caught in the wave and you think that, you know, you can't get out of it, that's when life gets hard. So there's different tools. I just want to share them with people. And
I think that's really important, is to recognize, you know, a bad day doesn't have to be a bad week. You know, I said that to a friend of mine recently. He's like, how are you feeling today? And I was like, I'm feeling great. I'm going to have to feel something. I'm just going to feel great. And it's as simple as that sometimes, because otherwise you're like, oh, how am I feeling? I'm a bit tired. I'm a bit, bit this. I'm a bit that. It's, yeah, don't let a bad day become a bad week. I love that. So men's, yeah, I'm really interested in that.
Here's another quick one just on that. What I've started doing on all my sessions now, corporate or otherwise, is we start every session with 5 minutes of breath work. And what I do is I ask everyone on the call, let me know in the chat box, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do you feel? And people will put in their 5s, 6s, 7s, 8s, 9s, whatever it might be. Then I say, we're going to do our breath work now. We do 5 minutes of breath work. I ask them again, how do you feel now? And generally, it's a little bit higher. And the reason for doing that is to say that sometimes we can feel like I'm a victim of my feelings. Like I feel the way I feel. And again, I see something on Instagram that upsets me and now I feel triggered. And then the bad triggering turns into a minute and the whole day goes off course. I need to press pause. How do I feel? I feel anxious. How do I want to feel? I want to feel calm. What's one thing I can do to feel 5% calmer? Again, it's not a switch that you flick and everything's perfect, but sometimes we don't help ourselves. I talk a lot about emotional awareness and emotional literacy at the moment, and that's being able to go beyond this idea of how are you? I'm fine. Because I'm fine doesn't tell me much.
I'm grand. Okay. The Irish answer for everything. I'm grand.
Yeah. And so it's a practice of just getting a little bit better at that. Like I have a tool that I can send on if anyone wants to reach out and just email me. I can send it on to you. It's an emotional wheel where you basically become a little bit better at naming your emotions. So how do I feel? I feel rejected. Okay, how do I want to feel? I want to feel accepted. How could I find a little bit more acceptance? Maybe I have to find that acceptance of myself. Maybe I have to make peace with myself. So it's just this thing of, like, I talk to the lads on the group. I say, for me at least, when I throw when I have negative feelings and I turn to alcohol or I turn to distraction or I turn to gossip or I turn to these disempowering behaviors, that's me being a boy. It's me being like a child. Me being a man is saying, I feel lousy right now. What can I do to make myself feel better in an empowering way? And that requires, again, the pause, the taking a step back, responding rather than reacting. Anyway, I could talk all day.
No, look, it's brilliant. And I think this is meshed both. It's meshed your story and meshed tools for people. I think especially now, it's really, really important for entrepreneurs, but also everyone, just to have those tools to kind of go, it's a bad day, but it won't be bad in the afternoon. I have two more questions for you. The last one is to recommend a book that's had a big impact on you professionally or personally. And the second last one, and it kind of ties into your podcast that I was listening to, I think it was a few days ago, is your planning. You're a guy that achieves a huge amount in terms of, you pack a lot in. How do you plan? This is something I'm personally very interested in, is how do you plan your year, month, week, day?
Yeah, I could be better on this, but I tend to work in quarter blocks. So I do 12-week blocks. And I break it down to four areas. So health, self, relationships, and career. Health relates to my physical and mental health. So I'll just set an objective for the 12 weeks. What do I want to achieve over 12 weeks? It used to be kind of outcome-based. So I'd say my outcome is I run a marathon or I climb a mountain or whatever. Sometimes then I'll do process-based. So process could be over the next 12 weeks, I'll do 12 flotation sessions in the float tank. So health and then self relates to my hobbies, new things I want to learn. Relationship relates to obviously my relationships in life. And then work is financial or lifestyle-based. I set goals for 12 weeks. I literally work backward and say what needs to happen within a month to keep me on track, 2 months to keep me on track. And then I go back to the week and then I go back to the day. And that's kind of, that's all I do. That's not in my nature to be that disciplined and that kind of planning based, but I try to do that. Don't always get to my things, but I definitely get a lot more done than if I didn't have a plan. So there's that. The other thing is I jump before I'm ready. So I sign up to things that are massively scary and intimidating to me. And I just, I presume that it's that idea, jump and you'll trust that you're going to grow wings on the way down. Don't wait to grow the wings. That's really it. I mean, look, pen and paper is my best friend. I sit down in the evening. What do I need to do tomorrow? Very simple. Get it done. Don't always get it done, but I do my best.
How do you mesh the two? Because I use the exact same system as you do. And sometimes I have these conflicts in my head between I'm going to do something massive. It's very, very process or very, you know, I'm going to run a marathon. Mm. Okay, great. Then I kind of get the conflict between the processes in like, I'm going to run twice a day. And sometimes the two don't tally. How do you marry the two?
One thing that can be useful is asking the question, who is that person? In other words, if I was to say, my objective is to run a marathon, I kind of try, rather than see myself as who I am now, I fast forward and I say, well, who is the person that's able to run a marathon? That person probably runs a couple of times a week. They probably have a coach. They probably eat in a certain way. They probably prioritize recovery. And those become my processes for the outcome, if that makes sense. Mm. So who do I need to become? You know, relationships, another interesting one. If someone's trying to find a relationship, you maybe list what your dream partner looks like. And then on the far side of the page, you say, well, what type of person does she want to be with? Because I'm not just thinking, oh, I want to find a supermodel who's got a huge IQ and, you know, has got money to travel the world and bring me with her. It's like, well, what's in it for her? Like, who do I need to be? So it's interesting to take your outcome goals and then reflect on what does that person do? And then how do I start moving toward that, you know?
I love that. That's a great one. What does that person look like? That's a really good simple trick because suddenly you're like, oh, yeah.
Again, it kind of comes back to our thing of the success starts the day that you start showing up in that way. So now when I recognize what the marathon runner does, I'm not waiting until the marathon day to feel like a success. I'm like, okay, from today, I'm being a marathon runner. I'm stepping into that identity. It's funny. We did a graduation call the other night on a 12-week course that I've been running. It's been pretty intense. We've done hours together every week, this group of 20 people. And everyone was really wrecked, tired on the graduation call. And it wasn't what everyone, and some of them were saying, I'm sorry, I'm so tired. Like I wanted this to be a special call and I wanted it to be on a high and stuff. And I was like, this is perfect that you're all tired. Like this is the reality of life. You don't just happen to, you know, things just don't always go the way you think you're going to go. We've had loads of days where you've been on a high. It doesn't matter that you're on a low today or you're a bit tired today. You'll be back on form tomorrow. So again, the marathon day, as you said earlier, you might start the business, you might become a yoga teacher and not actually love it. But if you love a lot of the days leading up to it, you're kind of enjoying the experience as much as you can.
It's such a cliche. And I realize as I get older, cliches are nearly all completely accurate about loving the journey. And it is. And it sounds so like, bleh, love the journey, love every day. But it's true. You know, if you're loving what you're doing every day, not that the end result doesn't matter, but it definitely takes a lot of the pressure off going, oh my God, I have to love this day because I've been waiting for this day forever. And suddenly it can often be an anti-climax. So it's, yeah, it's.
Yeah, the true source of stress in life is expectation. My expectations about the way things should be are always my stress point. If I think my partner should show up in a certain way, then I'm only going to see I've got the blinkers on. And if they don't show up that exact way that I think they should is the heavy word. If there's ever should involved, mm-hmm. It can be an issue. But if I think my partner should, I don't know, give me hugs and kisses every day when I wake up in the morning and they don't do that, suddenly I just think they're the worst in the world because they're not living in my reality. It's like, well, it's not everyone else's job to live in my reality. It's my job to accept what is, you know?
That's a great point. We'll end on that. One last question. What book has made an impact on you professionally or personally?
It's funny, I used to say the strangest secret, the one that I mentioned earlier, but in more recent times, the last 2 years, Anthony de Mello, Awareness. And rather than by the book, actually all the lectures are on YouTube. This guy was a Jesuit priest. He died in 86, but he shared Eastern wisdom. And he's an amazing storyteller, really funny guy. The reason I say watch the audio or the videos is he's just, his delivery is very good. It's kind of different in the book, but when he died, the church didn't really know what to do with him because he'd always been telling people there is not that there is no God, but he was saying, look back to yourself. You have all the answers. Mm. He's a really, really good speaker and he's a great philosopher and his stuff is really good. So Awareness, I would say, is the book that I would encourage people to check out.
Super. Pat, thank you so much. Where can people learn a little bit more about yourself?
PatDivley.com. I had to think about that one. PatDivley.com. And the men's stuff is at formen.ie, F-O-R-M-E-N.ie. And then I've got the podcast and my social channels. But thanks for having me. And I have to say, I don't do a lot of these because, as I said to you, it's not easy to have the role of interviewing people. Or interviewing is probably not even the word. It's having a conversation. You're good at doing that. So I definitely acknowledge you on that front. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. Coming from someone like yourself, that is high praise. So I'm going to soundbite that clip and play it to myself whenever I'm having doubts. Thank you, Pat. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
And that was this week's episode with Mr. Pat Dively. I hope you enjoyed it. Go check out Pat's podcast and do check out his website, as he has a wealth of resources and the majority of them are free to use, as he mentioned on the pod. There's a huge amount. If you enjoyed today's chat, you'll definitely enjoy listening to Pat's podcast and doing some of his exercises. I've done a lot of them myself. I found them extremely beneficial. And that is it for this week's podcast. I will see you next week. And between now and then, take some action and try define where you want to be this time next year, next week, next month. I'll see you next week.